Blog Talk Radio.
Power Show, and my name is Beverly D. Tonight I have two guests that will be joining us. My first guest is Raheem Jerome Brooks, and he is an author. He has several books out. He has his own publishing company called Prodigy Publishing Group. And my second guest will be E. Greece, and they are having a reggae festival this Saturday in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and also he is legalizing, going to put on the ballot to legalize marijuana in Michigan, so he's going to talk about the marijuana laws that we have in Michigan, and Raheem Brooks will also be in Michigan, in Detroit, Warren, Michigan, this weekend, too, Saturday, April the 7th, and he will be at the DeQuinder bookstore, Hood Books, in DeQuinder Flea Market. And so both of my guests will be having activities going on in Detroit this Saturday, April the 7th. And so for those of you that are in Michigan, you can come out and get your book signed by the author, Raheem Jerome Brooks, and also you can find out information and also go to the festival that will be held in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with the Greece. And so I'm waiting for my guest to call in, Raheem Brooks. I'm waiting for him to call in. He will be calling in shortly, and then we can talk about his information that he, oh, here he is. I see him now. Let's get him here. Okay, hey. Raheem, how are you doing? Hey. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, how are you?
Great, great. Now, tell us, your books, you deal with a criminal information in your books. Tell me, how did you come about becoming a writer, and what got you interested in writing that kind of information?
Well, I think, well, first of all, I started writing when I was incarcerated, so, and I just took what I was incarcerated for and wrote about it. I wrote about the prevention of it, rather,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just writing a fiction novel.
So you were right there, and you were interviewing these people, and so you were getting firsthand information, and you
right.
put it in your book.
Right. I used to talk to guys, let them read my stuff, and the ones that was, you know, arrested for similar crimes, which were like, you know, white collar crimes, identity theft and credit card theft and stuff like that, I would talk to them and find out what they did. Some of the things that worked for them, didn't work for them, some of the ways they operated in committing crime. And I kept notes and wrote it all down and created stories out of them.
Well, that was smart of you. At least you did something productive with your time.
I did.
That was good. Now, also, in 2010, you won the Book of the Year Award. In 2011, you won the Author of the Year Award.
thanks for reminding me, but yeah, I put my first novel Last Now. I did win the Book of the Year, and later Author of the Year. So that was good to know that my hard work actually paid off, and it was actually working, helping, motivating people to be, you know, better with protecting their identity and their financial livelihoods.
Now, in your book, you give them information about how what to look for and things like that, or is it written in just a fiction, you know, telling a story?
It's written in a fictional way, but it definitely assists with helping people protect themselves, and that is done by the story. Basically, if you see something happen to a particular character, you know, one would surmise not to allow that to happen to them to prevent that from happening. It's written in a way where if you're reading it from a fictional standpoint, you also can see the nonfiction self-help material right there in plain view. You're just watching it happen as opposed to someone lecturing it to you.
And how many books do you have out now?
A total of four. I have three paperback novels and four novels that are on ebook. So all three paperbacks are in ebook form too. The one paperback novel, if you buy it, the one ebook, I do have copies. They only sold in my website, but they're actually in one of my books, Last Man, as well.
And what's the latest book that you have?
My latest book coming out in May is Murder in Germantown. There's an excerpt of that on my website, and there's also an excerpt available in ebook format on Amazon.
Okay, and so Laugh Now was the one that you just recently done, correct?
No, Laugh Now was my very first book. That one.
That was your first one.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now, what was the last one? What was the last one you did? Was it Die Later?
Yeah, Die Later was the actual last one I actually published. That was earlier this year.
Okay. And so, are you still in school?
Say that again.
Are you still in film school?
No, I'm not in film school any longer.
Okay. So, what are you doing now? Are you just dealing with your publishing company, or are you going to do screenplays? Where are you going now?
Well, right now I am sitting back contemplating what my next move is going to be, whether it's going to be a stage play, adaptation of my book, or a variation of the topics in a stage play, or if I'm going to try to do a short film to pitch later on for a feature film, something indie. I'm not sure what avenue I'm going to take, but I'm definitely trying to make all of them, at least start with one of them. I am at least looking to make something, you know, theatrical with them.
Okay, great. Now, the Germantown, can you kind of give us a little bit of what that is about?
Yeah, Murder in Germantown is about a defense attorney who was featured in my novels Laugh Now and Die Later. And in Murder in Germantown, there is there's a triple homicide, and Rayvon Lamel, he is the defense attorney brought on to defend the accused.
Okay. All right. Now, you're going to be in Michigan this coming Saturday, April the 7th. You're going
yes,
to be at the Quinder Flea Market, which Hood Book Store is in there, and you're going to be there from 11 to 4. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to be, for the first time, leaving the East Coast. I've pretty much been between Virginia and Boston. Now, I've been straddling right along the coast, but I'm finally heading to the Midwest. And eventually, I guess I'll inch my way all the way to, I don't know, maybe Asia, but at least across America.
Okay, well, that's good. Now, where are you at now?
I live in Philadelphia, and that's where I am now, in Philadelphia.
Okay. That's great. And so are you saying that all of your books are on ebook, or can you go to, like, Amazon and order your books?
Yeah, they're all on Amazon. Amazon Kindle, Nook, Sony, iTunes, Kobo. They're okay. Basically in every e-reader format. And paperbacks are available on my website, and they're available in the Kindle store as well.
Now, what is your website? Noble.
It's my name, Raheem Brooks, which is spelled R-A-H-I-E-M, as in Mary, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S. RaheemBrooks.com. And I want to encourage everybody to sign up on my website as well, because that's where I give, like, the exclusive deals. Last week I offered everybody that was a member my paperback novels for $7, and you pretty much can't get that nowhere. I couldn't lower it to that amount on Amazon because I wouldn't get any money from doing that. So on my website, I can give people that buy directly from me that sort of discount. So right now I'm just trying to build up my beef to my actual website and get more interaction there, as opposed to just Facebook and Twitter and, you know, LinkedIn and stuff like that.
Mhm. Mhm. What is your website again?
It's Raheem Brooks, R-A-H-I-E-M. Brooks, BROOKS.com.
Okay. Now, you told us about, you gave us a little something about the murder in Germantown. Give us a little something about Laugh Now, where you won the award for.
Laugh Now is the story of Andre and Kareem Bezel, who are two African-American kids who find themselves living in the suburbs of Philadelphia in the area called King of Prussia. And they have some pressure on them to basically maintain the same lifestyle as their younger white counterparts. And they both take on criminal livelihoods to do that. One commits identity theft and fraud crimes, and the other one sells drugs. And the thing is, neither one of them knows. They both go to school, go to practice for sports, go home, have dinner with their families like nothing ever happened. So when they both discover that, they basically start working together, working in tandem to, you know, commit bigger crimes, and everything falls short when they get involved with a corrupt drug enforcement agent. And he basically applies pressure to them to keep committing crime, although they may not want to any longer. But he applies the pressure to say, basically, you either continue to or I'm going to take you down. So.
Yeah, sounds good.
Interesting.
Now, what about you have another book, Contest?
Yes, Contest that was my first mystery suspense novel after I had became a member of Mystery Writers of America. So I wrote a novel, Contest, and that's basically about an author named William Fortune, who is a blockbuster author and screenwriter, but he receives all of his information from a felon.
Mm-hmm.
He actually talks to a criminal who feeds him all of his criminal stories. And basically, the criminal threatens to pull the plug from under him unless he meets certain demands. And one of them is writing the story of how he escaped arrest. Basically, he wants the author to write exactly how he escaped arrest. And the author is like, well, you know, I can't do that. You know, I'll be arrested for aiding and abetting you, seeing that I've been giving you money for the last few years. Long story short, the author ends up kidnapped and missing, and his wife has to save the day.
Okay. That sounds interesting, too. And then you have a book, First Laugh.
Yeah, First Left is an ebook only, and what I did was when I didn't even write Last Now to have a sequel. I only wrote Last Now to be a standalone novel. What happened was I did get a slight demand for a sequel, although I don't believe it was set up to have one. But in creating Last Now, I had cut a lot of material out, and 30,000 words basically didn't make it to print. So what I did was I used it to make an ebook only, which is First Last. And again, also, if you buy paperback novels from my site, the way I have it set up is my paperbacks have First Last inside of Last Now, so you get both of them in the paperback if you buy from my website.
Okay.
But it's technically only an ebook only.
Okay. Right. Now, when you was locked up, were you interesting, or were you doing writing before you was locked up, or did you get the idea after you were locked up?
No, I wasn't writing at all. I was just basically sitting back, chilling, reading, and then I just, I'm really like a mystery fan. I like John Grisham and James Patterson. I didn't even really learn about any urban fiction authors like Quan and Alistair D. Bates until I got to jail. I never even knew that material like that existed. The only thing close to that to street lit or urban lit was Sister Soldier book, Coldest, whatever. Other than that, I did not know that there was novels like that in the world. So reading them, I was like, okay, this is interesting that they actually have novels that are like this, and they were interesting. But I did get a little bored because they started blending in the same and being at the same book. So I got bored, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I stumbled across a book by Eric Jerome Dickey, and it was Thieves' Paradise. And in Thieves' Paradise, it was about some guy that was running a scam selling people houses. So I was like, geesh, I was actually in jail with somebody that was in jail at that particular time for doing that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually in there for stealing. Him and a ring of people was taking people's houses and then reselling them to other people.
Yeah.
So I was like, geesh, this is like happening right in front of my face. It's like, it was like bigger than news in Philadelphia at the time when I was reading the book. So I said, well, that's like white collar crime. It's like fraud. So, I could write a book about the stuff I was doing and maybe it'd be relatable. That's why, like, when I sat there and decided to write Last Now, I only added the drugs in the character because I thought the drugs in the character would have been necessary to make the story street lit, urban lit, relatable to black people. Otherwise, I felt like perhaps it wouldn't have been as relatable to black people if I did not add the drug dealer element. So I really just wrote him from scratch, and that did come from a lot of research and talking to people because I had no idea how to sell drugs. I didn't ever sell drugs.
Uh-huh.
And so I just put it all together to make it become what it did.
Great. And so when you were in there interviewing the inmates, they didn't have a problem giving you the information. They know that you wanted the information for your book.
Yeah, they were intrigued by it. I mean, I was never. Plus, I was the sort of inmate. I actually worked in the law library, and people had to essentially trust me if they wanted to get help with their case. A lot of guys were skeptical about talking about their case or giving up information about their case because, guys, become rats in jail and turn state's evidence on people, and they'd be right there chilling with you in the cell, drinking illegal liquor with you, smoking smuggled drugs with you, and you're talking about your case, and you go to trial, and the same guy is sitting in the witness stand testifying against you. That threat did exist, but I kind of went through my jail period where it was explicitly clear that I was definitely on team inmate. I had wanted no parts of testifying on nobody or anything like that. I actually tried to work as hard as I could to help the most guilty individual beat his case. So I didn't have a difficult time, you know, talking to guys. No.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, so that they kind of trusted you, like you say, because you worked in the law library.
Right.
Okay. So did you write, or are you thinking about writing about your experience that you had as an inmate?
You know what? The life of an inmate isn't all that interesting. A story
okay.
about
unless
prison
you,
isn't all
unless
that interesting.
It's, Okay. Unless a lot
of
drama
is the
going
only
on. Way,
huh? No. The only way that it becomes interesting is if it involves inmate-on-inmate sex.
Oh.
You know, women seem to be intrigued by that sort of thing. So, you know, if they can get that in the storyline, then perhaps they're going to be cool with it. But, you know, to just write about the day in the life of an inmate, it would definitely have to be a portion of the story. You couldn't write an exclusive story about prison life. Unless it was like Malcolm X, or unless it was Reuben Hurricane Carter, where you're teaching a history lesson and you're going over a figure, you know, something like that. You can't just, it would be boring. People don't want to read about, I mean, it's repetitive. You get up every day, you eat your three meals, you go to the rec yard and back in your cell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. And so now you're doing your tours now. So you're going and you're doing book signing, and you're going to be at Hood's Book Store at the DeQuinder Flea Market, which is at 2900 DeQuinder.
Is that 20900?
It's 20900 DeQuinder.
Right.
Okay, and that's Warren, Michigan.
Yeah, in Warren.
Okay. And you will be there Saturday, April the 7th, between 11 and 4 p.m.
Right.
And you will be signing books.
I will. I'll have all three of my novels. I will have the art book club recipe book. I will have copies of that handy. And I did publish another author, Jabril Jones. His novel, Coming of Age, is a young adult / street lit novel. I'll have that as well. So I'm coming all the way there for the first time, and I'm coming with everything, all my ammunition. And we're also going to have, like, the host is actually author Michelle Moore. I don't know if you're familiar with her book series, Say You Promise. And she's actually the owner of the bookstore. She's an author, a fellow author as well. She plans on having jelly shots and Moscato champagne and some chips. She just texted me earlier and asked me what kind of chips or special waters that I want or anything. So we're kind of making it like an event for people to come out and have a good time.
She's having, did you say Jell-O shots?
Is it Jell-O or jelly? I'm not sure. I'm not really a drinker
like that. Yeah, it's the Jell-O shots. Yes.
Okay.
It's Jell-O. Uh-huh. Oh, is that interesting? So that's Saturday, April the 7th. That should be very fun.
Yeah,
I haven't been there in a while, but I'm familiar with the place.
All right, so I look forward to seeing you there in person.
Yeah. And now you have a publishing company, too.
Yes.
Now,
I've published one novel thus far.
Okay.
Right.
If somebody out in the audience and they have a book or they write in a book, can they come to your publishing company and you help them?
Of course, I have on my website, I have submission guidelines. And I'm very strict about that. I pretty much ignore requests that don't follow the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when somebody hits me up 2 months later, say, "Hey, I submitted my stuff to you and you didn't respond," I tell them, "Well, your documents weren't formally properly, they were not properly formatted, and it wasn't readable." I mean, how can I read your work if you have people speaking dialogue all messed together? Like, I need it in proper format, each individual speaker on separate lines and indented. I need to see paragraphs, you know, headers with your name. I mean, it's such a simple thing. It is such a simple thing to buy a book on how to submit your material. You know, get one on computer. You know, Google it and just see what a properly formatted submission looks like. You know, authors mm-hmm. that don't even take the time to do that minimum when you're going to have the publisher do everything else for you, you know, get your cover done, get your editing done, get your book tours done, and stuff like that, the least you could do is properly submit your work.
Now, when they submit their work, you want it, what is that, proofread written and all of that, all the mistakes out of it, or?
I don't expect it to be error-free. I do expect it to be clean-looking. I do expect it to be clean. So, you know, I see stuff all the time that, you know, it blends second and third person. It blends present tense and past tense, you know, within the same paragraph. You don't know what point of view it's coming from a lot of times. But that's stuff that people, sure, you can read a book and learn about, you know, point of view, tense, and stuff like that. Do I expect you to be really deep into catching all of those sort of errors if you have no formal training in it? No.
Mm-hmm.
But I do expect it to be, you know, a well-written story at least.
Okay. Now, how is the progress? When a person is writing a book, they don't pick the cover and all that. They just send you the written material, and then y'all go from there.
My one author I did have, he actually lived in Philadelphia, so it was a little simpler to get his book together, because we actually shot the cover photo at his house.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little simpler. But I did the work with the graphic designer. You know, we did shoot the picture there, but I actually went to the graphic designer's studio.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I was walking in the street, and somebody was screaming happy birthday
out. Okay.
So I had to mute my phone. I didn't want everybody to get all excited and think it was a birthday going on. So it was easy once we had the picture done. Then I went and I met with the graphic designer. I had everything pretty much done. And he just, yay or nay. He had 3 or 4 different options, some different color schemes. We worked around a couple of different things. And, you know, it's a collective effort. I'm not a tyrant. It's not, you know, okay, this is what it is and that's that. You need to be comfortable with the cover. How can you sell it if you ain't even comfortable with it? It's
mm-hmm.
like wearing a dress or a pair of shoes you don't like. You're not going to feel, you know, pretty or sexy in it all night if it's something you don't want to wear.
Right. Okay. And so how long have you had your publishing company?
Pretty much when I started my first book, and that's when my publishing company got born at the same time. I kind of did it from the beginning. I registered it and all that kind of stuff like that.
Okay, great. And, you know, as I say, you know, a lot of people are homeschooling their children, and, you know, to have some of your books as a must-read would be good, too, for that, for the homeschooled children.
Well, I'm trying all different things. Like right now, I'm contemplating Turner Last Now, not even making it Spanish language, but I'm thinking about changing the cover to add two Hispanic males on the cover and change the character names just to bring in an additional audience. I've talked to people that translate into Braille to try to have it translated for the blind. I'm trying a lot of different avenues to get myself in a lot of different markets. I definitely strive to be on top. I don't do this for fun. This is my job every day. I work.
Right.
Like everybody else, get up and go to work. I get up and I work at Prodigy Publishing Group.
Great. Well, just like you say you are doing it with the Spanish, you could also do it with other nationalities, you know?
Right, of course. I definitely think about that, especially with books being listed on in Amazon in French and in German, over in Australia, you know, so it's definitely a great thing when you can have your novels translated into one of those languages and then offered on Amazon in that language. I think that would be perfect to pay someone to translate into German and then get a different cover and promote it on the German Amazon site.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, you know, Amazon is all over the place, so that's
right.
An excellent idea. Now, when you write, are you constantly writing? Like, you have a new novel that's coming out. You know, do you start, as soon as you finish one, do you start on another one? How do you do that?
I do, but I am a drafter, a story outliner. Like, right now, I have I think it's 47 page. I have a 47 page outline to a novel. So practically, while I was writing Murder in Germantown, I also worked on the outline to, which will be my sixth novel, because I'm going to do another sequel to Laugh Now, Die Later. I'm going to do one more to that, and then I'm going to be ready for my other book. And I already have the draft for that done. It's just a matter of writing. My outlines are so extensive that when I'm actually in the writing process, it takes, you know, 2 months tops to do it, because I've already outlined it. I know pretty much how the story's going to go.
Okay. So it's like, you know, you don't have any set time. You just, whenever the creative spirit hits you, you just start writing, or you know.
Well, no, I have a fairly structured day, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really structured. I get up, I have breakfast and coffee, and then I immediately check like Amazon sales, and if there's any sales on my website, I figure out what my partner. They go and, you know, the books need to be shipped. They take care of that. See if anybody need to be contacted as far as payment for books that are out there, any outstanding invoices. I just take a real look at, you know, for someone that works in like a big office, you know, it would be like a quotidian report. I would just go and look at those things. If I had that secretary, you know, it would be prepared for me, but I got to prepare myself. What am I doing today? And then from there, I decide, you know, if I'm going to be writing, if I'm writing at home, if I'm going out to Starbucks to write, if I'm staying in to write. I pretty much play it all by, not by ear, but I wake up with it being played by ear, and I outline it, you know, for the day.
Okay.
So the day may consist of making cold calls to bookstores my books aren't in. You know, getting paid for invoices that are outstanding, reading submissions, sending submissions to my reviewers. I have two people that read for me, as well as myself. So it may be looking at stuff that was submitted. I go over my website daily. I look at it to make sure everything is in order. I don't have any bad information on there. My calendar is up to date. All my spellings are accurate. You know, everything is working properly. I check that daily. So it's a full-time job.
Mm-hmm. And then when you're working with someone, like if someone has a book and they want you to publish it, so you pretty much work on that too, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I work on everything that happens for myself, I do for any book that will be published by me. Like I said,
mm-hmm.
Jabril Jones' book, when I go to Detroit, his books are going with me. He's not there, but I have an obligation to that novel because it's a part of my brand. It's a part of my company.
Yes. Okay.
So it goes where I go. The Art Book Club, the Art Book Club recipe book, that's not necessarily a part of my brand, but I'm a featured author, so that goes where I go.
Great. So now, Saturday, April the 7th, you will be at Hood Book Store at 20900 DeQuinder. That's in Warren, Michigan. You will be there signing your books between 11 and 4 p.m.
Right.
Okay.
I most certainly will. I'm actually leaving to come here Thursday. I have an interview on Thursday. I think it's on SMX Radio. It's a live broadcasted show, and I'll be
on Thursday.
There. Yes.
So what's the, say that again, what's the station again?
I think it's SMX Radio. I'm not 100% sure, and I got to check it out on my stuff, but, yeah, they have a live radio show, so I'll be featured on there. I was on there 2 weeks ago, and they're based in Detroit, so when I told them I was coming to Detroit, they invited me to come into the show. It's like, it's live streamed, so I'm going to go on and Thursday for that. And Friday, I'm going to go to the Gospel Museum, the Gospel Music Museum.
Okay.
And the Detroit Zoo. Those are my things for Friday. I may even find myself somewhere at a party, who knows. But on Saturday, I'll be at the bookstore, and then I'll come home on Sunday.
Great. Okay. Well, Raheem Books, give them your information again where they can order your books.
All right, again, it's my email address. Pardon me. Jeez, my email address. My website is raheembrooks.com, R-A-H-I-E-M, brooks.com. You can also go to Prodigy Publishing Group. ProdigyPublishingGroup.com is also where you can reach me. The submission guidelines for any author that wanted to submit some work. What I'm looking for is I'm not looking for cliche urban street lit. I am absolutely not looking for that. I do not want a drug dealer main character. I do not want the drug dealer's girlfriend takes over while he goes to jail and she kills all his friends. I do not want that.
Okay.
I do not want the baby mama drama. He's a drug dealer. She's at home. She's mad because he's always out in the streets. I don't want any of that. Anything, I'm looking for everything. Sci-fi, fantasy, mystery, suspense, urban lit. That has a new slant. I'm looking for that as well. I'm just not looking for anything that's typical and run of the mill. I'm not looking for any of that.
Okay, great.
And,
go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I was looking at that. That's pretty much it. I am definitely looking to publish. I'm not opposed to it. I just haven't found material that, you know, I don't want to imitate Triple Crown and, you know, Wahida Clark. That's not my goal in this business, is to set myself apart from them. I can't do that publishing the same things they publish.
Well, that's good. You know, I see you having much, much success. And again, one more time, give them your information before we leave.
All right, my website is RaheemBrooks.com. And again, I encourage all of you to sign up for my site. That's where I give out the exclusive deals. I'm on Twitter, Raheem Brooks. I'm on Facebook, Raheem Brooks. I am on Shelfari, Raheem Brooks, Goodreads, LinkedIn. I'm like a Raheem Brooks machine. That's everything is Raheem Brooks. Also, if you get a chance, check out my homeboy, Christopher Clark. You can look him up as well. And my girl, Emmy Red. You can look them two authors up as well. They have good material. So it depends on what you want to read. Between us three, you should definitely be able to read something.
Okay. Great, great. And I will see you Saturday. I'll come up there and get your book, your latest book again. It's which one? You have one coming out in May, Murder in Germantown, right?
Yeah, but that's not, my Murder in Germantown isn't out yet. It's actually with the editor as we speak.
Okay, so what
shout
is
out,
the
shout
latest
out to my
book?
Editor, my editor, Jennifer McCutcheon, and my graphic designer who has been with me every book except Last Now,
okay.
Greg Goodwin. I've had the same graphic designer and the same editor through every book.
Okay, okay. So what was your latest one again, the last one?
My latest one is Die Later.
Okay. 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 Well, Raheem Brooks, it was good talking to you, and I really appreciate you, and I wish you much, much, much success. And again, Saturday, April the 7th, you will be at 20900 DeQuinder, and you will be at the Hood Bookstore in the DeQuinder Flea Market, and that will be from 11 to 4.
Yep, I look forward to seeing everybody from that area there, you included, and we're going to have a good time.
Okay, well,
I'm also looking for this, too. And I do want to say that in addition to, I'm always looking for new networking opportunities, so it's not all about me and coming up by my book. Any authors, any promoters, publicists, anybody that want to come down and network with Raheem Brooks and maybe, you know, create a bridge between Detroit and the East Coast, because I'm getting myself, you know, committed to everything. So everything published, and I'm getting myself committed to. So if you want to just come out and network with me in person, shake my hand in person, meet me face to face. You see me on Facebook. You want to actually meet me in the flesh. You don't have to come buy a book. I would encourage you to. I want you to. Yes, but. Come meet me. Come talk to me. Meet the person that you always see on Facebook and maybe see how I actually am in person.
Okay, great, great. So we will do that. So we'll see you Saturday, April the 7th from 11
right.
to 4. Thank
right,
you,
thank
Rodney.
You so much. You
okay.
have a good night.
Peace, you too. Peace and love.
All right, you too. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, so that is Raheem Brooks, and he is with Prodigy Publishing Company, and he will be in Detroit April the 7th from 11 to 4 p.m. Now, I'm going to take a short break, and I'm going to come back with my next guest, whose name is DeGreece, and he's going to talk about legalizing marijuana in Michigan. We'll be right back. Truth to Power show. My name is Beverly D. And now I have as my guest, and his name is DeGreece. Are you there?
I am all the way here.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well,
and,
thank you.
And Saturday, also Saturday, April the 7th, you will be in Ann Arbor. Are they having a After Bash Reggae Festival?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, you are dealing with legalizing marijuana in Michigan. Now, lots of people think that marijuana was already legalized in Michigan.
Well, Beverly, the status right now is that the voters of Michigan approved a law that would enable those who have a medical need certified by a doctor to have their marijuana to improve their medical condition. The voters approved that. But since it has been approved, those who fight against ganja for their own reasons, and a lot of these people are funded by the liquor companies, a lot of these politicians, they have voted to erode that law, to raid dispensaries and to raid innocent people and to try to diminish the law and fight against it just because to suit their own diabolical agenda. So therefore,
go ahead.
We have an election this year which will legalize marijuana for everyone, not just for the medical patients.
Oh, so that's what you're going to put on the ballot to legalize marijuana. And so how is it that they're raiding the medical marijuana if it was legalized? I mean, is that the feds doing that or is that the state doing that?
Well, the feds, that's a whole different issue because it is still illegal on the federal level. However, the feds have made a promise, which they have broken, but generally they operating under a promise that they will allow the states to deal with this question and, you know, to not interfere. So on the state level, the attorney general and the governor and even the mayor of Detroit have fought against the law and have tested the law and have used their might and their armed might to raid dispensaries and take them to court only for the people to be acquitted and their property returned to them after, you know, having been traumatized and so forth. So you ask, why do they do it? They do it because they can.
Okay, so it's more of like an harassment kind of tactic.
Yes, it is.
Making them spend unnecessary money and then hoping that they would just get frustrated and go away.
Right, they're trying to fight against it in any way that they can.
Mm-hmm. So now you have a petition that's going on. Correct.
Yes. Right now we're circulating a petition, and it's a statewide effort to gather the signatures to put this law on the ballot and to decide, let the people decide once and for all, do they want to put people in jail for marijuana or not?
So if you have these politicians that they're not even going by what the people said they wanted for medical marijuana, do you think that they're going to go by the law with legalized marijuana?
That's a very good question, Beverly. And, you know, personally, you know, I've been smoking ganja since 1965. No matter what any law or what any government says, And there is an entire underground economy. There's an underground industry that has existed and will continue to exist no matter what the law does. So we're trying to get as much protection from the Constitution as possible, because there's nothing in the Constitution that says you cannot consume ganja or cannabis, marijuana, if you will. And on the contrary, back in the days of George Washington, some states had laws that you had to plant hemp because it was such a useful product in those days. But for political reasons, everything has been flipped, and now it has been demonized. And so many people just go along with this because they don't personally want to consume the ganja, or they don't want their children to consume the ganja. So they go along with the hysteria of the drug war to demonize this God-provided substance.
Well, what they always say, they always come back as, you know, well, it's not so much the marijuana, but it's like they start out with the marijuana and it leads to other things. That's their same theme song that they say over and over again.
Yeah, well, that kind of logic, first of all, has been disproved scientifically. And secondly, you could say that about anything. You could say that people who use hard drugs started eating sugar, you know, when they were babies. You know what I mean? So sugar, a gateway drug, many of them smoked tobacco before they started using hard drugs. You know, is that a gateway drug? So that's a totally irrelevant argument. And one of the problems with cannabis is that it has been classified and associated with the so-called hard drugs. It has nothing to do with that. If you look at the death rates from drugs, the number one drug killer, and Whitney Houston will tell you this, in the United States is the prescription drugs. Then you have the alcohol. Then you have the your heroines and your cocaines and so forth. Now, never in the history of humankind has anyone been reported to have had an overdose of cannabis. You know, and I'm going back 4,000, 10,000 years that the cannabis has been used. Even in the biblical times. Don't let me get started on that one.
Well, I can imagine that. I know in Michigan here, a lot of the young people that live in the suburbs in these so-called well-to-do neighborhoods, a lot of them are strung out on heroin. So I know that their parents, if they had to deal with their children on drugs, I know they would prefer them to be smoking, well, the street, we call it weed. What do you call it? What's the legal name?
You know, realistically, you know, people want to be substance-free, and they should be, you know, control of themselves. But if you have a patient who has a problem, such as a drug addiction, I'll tell you one thing, a crackhead would rather smoke some free weed than to go out and have $1,000 a week crack habit. You know what I'm saying? And if you give them some free weed, it might not substitute for the crack, but you let them keep smoking those joints for free, and they would kind of forget about going out and selling themselves and committing crimes or robbing people to try to get some crack. So it can be, now it could be not a drug problem, but it could be a cure for the drug problems and other health emotional problems also.
Now, isn't it, you know, considered a herb, or they have took it out of the herb classification?
Yeah, it is an herb, and it is falsely identified as a narcotic. It is falsely identified as a drug because, see, drugs are man-made, okay? Cocaine mm-hmm. is man-made. It's processed,
mm-hmm.
okay? But the ganja, it is a natural herb.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plant created by the creator. It wasn't created by in a lab. It was created by the creator. So he who fights against that, they have
so
a fight
what
with
they, it. So what the lawmakers have done is they have specifically singled out a certain herb, and they saying that this herb is illegal for you to smoke or eat or make tea out of it or however.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole political, economic, and racial history that goes with the prohibition because, you know, at one point, the cannabis was not only legal, it was the most prescribed substance in the 19th century. However, in the 20th century, the smoking of reefers, as they call it, began to be associated with Mexicans who were moving into the country, with jazz musicians in New Orleans and so forth. And there was a turnaround in the attitudes. But those who orchestrated this turnaround were those who had a vested interest in eliminating hemp and eliminating cannabis. And these were the alcohol industry, the chemical industry. For example, hemp made the finest ropes and so forth. But when DuPont invented nylon, they joined the effort to demonize hemp. The forest paper industries, okay, those like Hearst himself, who owned huge tracts of forest, which they used those trees to make paper for their newspapers. They were deeply invested in that. Hemp can make much better paper without all of the harsh chemical processes that are used in turning wood into paper.
Mm-hmm.
And hemp is renewable. You can grow an entire crop every year, unlike a forest, which, as you know, once it's gone in our
mm-hmm.
lifetime. So
right.
These are just some of the powerful industries that joined together to demonize hemp. And I say the alcohol industry and the Smirnoff family were key among those.
Mm.
And it
wow.
continues to this day because you could imagine how powerful the alcohol industry is, say, in this state and in this city, you know, where you have alcohol being sold, you know, barrels, you know, every day,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and people lined up, people addicted, people committing all types of crimes and all types of, you know, personal debasement under the influence of alcohol. Any policeman would tell you what a horrible impact alcohol has on the community.
Yeah.
You know, from drunk drivers, spouse abuse, people committing crimes, they don't even know what they did, people getting in fights, you know, the health issues,
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
Mental time wasted and the lives wasted addicted to alcohol. So what I'm saying is the money that they have, they're in a position to try to fight against anything that's going to cut into their profits. And like I said, if you could grow your own herb, you might prefer Hennessy to weed, but would you rather have a $20 bottle of Hennessy, or would you rather have a free herb plant of the finest herb that could be grown?
So how is it that you can go to the health food store and you can get a bag of hemp? Now, is that the same?
Well, no.
It's
the same family of plants, but the hemp that is grown for industrial use, it doesn't have the meditative effects of the hemp that's grown for psychoactive use. So there's different strains and different subspecies and different qualities and so forth.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, the medical use for marijuana, what does it do? People take it for what, pain? Does it calm the pain down, stop the pain? What are they using it for?
Yeah, well, pain is one of the main medical uses. People suffer from chronic pain, and instead of taking pills, which are addictive and harmful,
mm-hmm.
They can consume the cannabis. And you don't have to smoke it. I mean, you can eat it. You can cook it in the food and so forth. Consume it and ease the pain. That's one use. There are a number of specific ailments, including colitis and glaucoma, asthma, et cetera, that it treats. And then you have, which is not included in the medical law, is the stress, which stress leads to every health problem.
Yes.
Relieving of stress is beneficial. And then also not included in the medical law is your emotional health. Those who can lift their spirits with the use of cannabis, that's not considered a medical use, but it you know, for us it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many signatures you have to have by you want to put it on the November election?
I was afraid you were going to ask. Because I don't know. All I have is my little sheet that, you know, I'm getting all my friends and relatives to fill out. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, there are hundreds, thousands of others who are also collecting signatures.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that the collecting is a little behind, and that there's a big effort on to step up on the signatures, and there's going to be a big event this weekend,
mm-hmm.
which tens of thousands of people will be there, and hopefully we'll get a lot of signatures at that one event this weekend.
Okay, now this is the aftermath that's going to be in Ann Arbor, right?
Well, yes.
The
actual
Reggae Festival.
Right, the actual event is the 40th annual Hash Bash, which happens every year, the first Saturday-ish of April. And then, in addition to that, we're having the After Bash Reggae Festival,
mm-hmm.
which will be an outdoor event featuring many of the region's top reggae bands.
Okay.
Yep.
And so they now, Ann Arbor is a college town. And so what they go and they are able to smoke out in the public and no problem?
Traditionally, Hash Bash has been an event where the thousands of people do light up right there on the campus. A few of them, and it's nothing really that anybody can do about it. But it's not officially legal.
Yeah.
On the street.
And it's been going on for 40 years?
That's correct.
Wow. And
yeah.
So you are having the Reggae Festival is going to be after that.
Yeah, it's going to it's coincide with it and then continue after the bash.
Okay.
It's going to be on a farm out in the country where we'll have complete freedom.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Okay. And I see you say it goes from noon until, so it's no end time there.
Yeah, we'll probably go till about 4:20 in the morning.
Okay. Let's see. I have someone here that wants to talk to you.
Okay.
Let's see.
All right.
3135. 3-2. Is this you, Chuckalia?
Vibrations. That's me, my sister.
Vibration. How you doing?
How are you, my sister?
Great,
you know,
great.
First, before I say anything, I want to thank you for bringing such a wonderful service to the community. I want to commend you, my sister. It's an honor to have someone like you bring a service to the community where we can have an outlet to release our emotional feelings and our rational ideas, which the government has always suppressed the people from putting their ideas on the airwaves. And I
agree
want to thank you,
you
for allowing us to do this, sister. It's wonderful.
Yeah, this is what it's all about.
Yeah, well, free opportunity is what we're supposed to be about. And I want to remind you, speaking of hemp,
mm-hmm.
the hypocritical Constitution of American rights was written on hemp paper. We know this, right?
Ooh.
And there were a time before the 19th century when hemp was a product that people used for the medium of exchange before they were dollar bills. They were trades from farms to farm where they used hemp to exchange for items. It was a fair exchange. And this really brings my question to the brother about capitalism and about taxing. I want to phrase that question to him in a few minutes, but I have a couple things I'd like to say, if I can get a minute, about hemp itself. It's a filling herb. You know, Bob Marley said in an interview that alcohol makes you silly and drunk and stupid. Hemp gets in your mind, it makes you expand your thinking. What's more intelligent? Okay, then you have to ask yourself, how many times on TV do you hear of vehicular homicides related to drinking and driving? As opposed to how many times you've heard of somebody hurting themselves of any nature behind marijuana. You just ain't heard that. You ain't heard of nobody getting hurt. You ain't heard of nobody wrecking no car. You ain't heard nothing, none of that related to marijuana. Marijuana is a plant that was put here by the sun in the elements of nature. And, well, I guess you could say cocaine and heroin was too, but they're controlled substances.
And they are processed plants.
Right.
Processed plants. They're not natural.
They're not natural. They're processed, and it makes them become a chemical. And
exactly.
Marijuana, they try to make it as a chemical when they're arresting you and fingerprinting you in, but marijuana is not a chemical. It's a natural plant. And
that's why I said early. That's why I said earlier. It's an herb, so you know it doesn't make sense what they're saying and what they're doing.
It doesn't at all. Well, brother, like the hash bash has been here for 40 years. I can testify to that. It's actually came out of the hash bash came out of the hippie era in Detroit from Plum Street in the Cass Quarter areas of Detroit to Ann Arbor, and they've always had the hash bashes where they were allowed the hippies to smoke marijuana free on just that day and for that affair. Now, 40 years later, the time has elevated to marijuana on the brinks of being legal. The brother, I may ask him to tell us a lot more about his little green flyers that he has around Detroit. I want to thank you for that too, brother, because there's a lot of information on one little flyer. And I want him to tell us about the role that High Times magazine is playing in this. And I also want you to tell us, my brother, about how do you think it's going to affect the black community, considering that there has been an underground era of marijuana sales in our community for many, many decades. And how is this going to become a tax base? You know, if it doesn't legalize and we get our goals and objectives done, how long do you think they're going to tax it and have it in Rite Aid, and how are they going to do it? And are they going to have the proper amount of THC in there for a person driving 60 miles an hour on the freeway smoking a joint. You understand? I mean, these feats that we're talking about doing are beyond American perception, but it's something that's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you, Junglia, it's a new day.
It's a new day.
You can expect the government to try to come and control this. You can expect the big corporations like Monsanto to come and try to control this. But it's a new day where we're starting to realize that the government can't and shouldn't control everything. For example, the Internet. Okay, the Internet has come and just burst wide open with the free flow of information. And similarly, when the ganja hits, it's going to burst wide open. And some things you can't control. You can't control the sun. They would try to sell you the sun if they could.
Yes, they would. They do in California.
Well, I'm
from there. I know.
They sell you the water. You know what I'm saying? They would try to sell you the air and the sun if they could. But
sell you the air at the gas stations. You got to pay 50 cents to get some air in your tire.
That's depressed air, yes. But my point is, Junglia, and there's been some talk of, say, $50 tax an ounce.
Really?
Okay. There's been some talk of that. And with the straits the government is in, believe me, they need to get some money from somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Because right now they're trying to get it from the poor drivers, you know, trying to get their license suspended. You know, they're restricting people's tax refunds, you know what I mean, any way they can to squeeze money out of poor people. So the government needs money, but, you know, the thing is, if they would ease up on the prisons, ease up on the judges and the cops that are necessary to enforce the drug war, they would save money right there. But then again, secretly, this is how they make money, by seizing people's property, you know what I'm saying, and supposedly reinvesting those funds to fight the drug war. But you know they don't reinvest it. Do you remember the police chief in Detroit? I'm not going to mention his name, but in the past, he was taking the money that they collected from the drug war, and he had it stuffed up in his ceiling in his house. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I do.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. What police chief? I'll mention his name. Which one was it? Okay.
We don't have to mention the brother's name because, you know, he's gone to prison and served his time, whatever. But the point is that this war, it creates corruption. You know, we've seen the corruption in Romulus. We've seen the corruption in E-Course. We've seen the corruption in Inkster. We've seen the corruption in Detroit. You know what I'm saying? When the cops confiscate the money, when the cops seize the property, I mean, where is that in the Constitution? I read the thing. I don't see it. You know,
I don't see it either.
One of the duties of the government is to come and enforce your behavior and to curtail your little hustle. I don't see how that's the duty. But haters, and when you talk about black people, the black people need to come out of the closet and they need to stop hating, because it's a large percentage of us who are out here right now smoking weed, maybe a little, maybe a lot, okay? But we can't admit it, and we can't come out and say it and advocate it. No, you know, it's, you know, under wraps and stuff. And then there's others who are haters. Some of them are clergymen or whatever, who they don't approve of ganja, so therefore they're in favor of the police fighting against it, sending our own people to jail. When you send a man to jail, do you know what that does to the black family?
Kills it.
Or a woman to jail. Do you know what that does to the black family?
And the children.
This is the war on drugs. It's a war on people.
It's a war on human rights. You know, brother, excuse me for saying this. I have to say this, get off my chest. You know, you're bringing something out in me. Actually, the people in our communities that have outlawed, they've outlawed marijuana. People have made money off of marijuana for decades in the black market and have gone to jail and fed the justice system money for bails, bondsmen, and all the other things that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And when they decide to legalize marijuana, those people won't even be able to get their hands on marijuana because the taxes and the prices will be so high. And that the people that kind of were the pioneers of the marijuana forging forward into this 20th century that we're in now, because now we're living in the future from 40 years ago. And the people that have been getting the marijuana for all those smokers that you're saying were illegally, when they tax it and take it from the people and make it a government thing, they will find tax dollars for it. And the poor people that forged for marijuana, like the ones that's going to sign your petition, marijuana may be priced to the point they won't only afford to get their hands on it. And this is what the cry and shame could be. We forged the progress of marijuana, and the government legalized it and take it right away and make it so high the average person can't afford it.
Well, I'll tell you, that's one of the problems, and that is one of the problems why the proposition failed in California is because those who are already in the industry, they're doing very well, and they don't want to mess up their little thing, which is a very selfish point of view. And the scenario that you mentioned is not going to happen because no matter how they tax it, no matter how they synthesize it, no matter how they package it, limit it, and poison it, or whatever they do, they can't stop the underground. They can't stop the underground now. How are they going to stop it when it's legal?
The underground will
be even bigger. So all of these hustlers will still have their hustle, okay? If they legalize it and then they sell, you can't sell it on Sundays, okay? You can't buy it on Sundays, or you can't buy it after 2 a.m., okay? The hustlers will still be selling it, you know? Or if they say the seeds have to come from Monsanto, the hustlers will still be growing it.
It kind of put you in the mind of the lottery. You know, when the street lottery was there and then the government took it over and now we have the lottery. And so they really put a hurting in a lot of the street lottery. I mean, it's still street lottery there, but they took a big chunk of their money.
They did. But like you said, the numbers are still happening on the street.
It's still there.
Uh-huh. But, yeah, it did put a big dent. That used to be one of the major underground industries of the black economy.
Can I ask you a question, brother Idris?
Yes.
Can you elaborate to me a little more about the concert you're having in Ann Arbor? I know you're having my cousin, Priest Holly Israel, and he is so wonderful with his new age music. And the mystic warrior has come back from Hawaii, and he's blowing up everything. But some of the other entertainers you're going to have at the concert? Can you tell me more about the entertainment that'll be going on at the Hash Bash this year?
Yeah, the After Bash Reggae Concert is an effort to elevate the Hash Bash into a musical and spiritual event, outdoors, under the sun, under the stars, in complete freedom. And reggae music has long, long been associated with the Ganja Liberation Movement. I mean, artists like Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, Jacob Miller were singing this back in the 70s, okay? They were saying, how can the herb be illegal, right? So this is why we're having this reggae concert. We've got Ross Kenty and the Take No Prisoners Posse. We've got Tonai from Kingston, Jamaica. We've got Priest Aya Haile Israel. We've got Kojo Sankofa from Ghana, West Africa. We've got a number of other reggae bands, reggae DJs, African drummers. Baba Malindwe will be there. And it's just a gathering of the tribes because people are coming from all over for the Hash Bash. High Times has taken over an entire hotel in Ann Arbor for the Hash Bash, High Times Magazine. So it's a big deal in the liberation movement. And I would just like to say, Beverly, that you know that May is African Liberation Month.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that February is Black History Month.
Right.
And you know that March is Women's History Month.
Mm-hmm.
April is Ganja Liberation Month.
Hmm.
Amen.
Yeah,
right.
you have the Hash Bash on the first Saturday nationwide on April 20th because 420 is a significant number for the ganja community. April 20th is going to be nationwide demonstrations. And then this year, it's actually going to be on May 5th, but we still consider April. It is a worldwide march for legalization. So last year in April, we had a million marijuana march in downtown Detroit
mm-hmm.
featuring DJ Eddie Riot. But this year, it's going to be on May the 5th. It's an international day of ganja liberation.
And where would that be at?
The Detroit event is going to be at Grand Circus Park on May the 5th.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And you say on Saturday, the Hash Bash is going to be on U of M campus?
The Hash Bash will be on the campus, on the Diag. Then there's a street fair on Monroe Street. And
mm-hmm.
then our event, which is the After Bash, will be going on all day and all night at a farm. It's a secret location,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
if you ask somebody.
Once you come out there, you'll find it.
Yeah, if you come to the Hash Bash, you'll find it. And then also on Facebook, if you go to After Bash, you can get
mm-hmm.
all the information.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
After Bash.
Yep.
Is there a WW number for that? Just Google After Bash?
No, you have to go to Facebook.
Go to Facebook. Okay.
On Facebook and hit Gash After Bash.
After Bash, yeah.
And so people need to bring their chairs and things like that, or their blankets
yeah.
if going to
yeah,
be outside.
Yeah, and it's family friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have events for the children also.
Okay.
And we have food, you know, vegan food as well as there might be some conventional food. And representatives from the industry will be there with their products.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the reggae music, and looking forward to just a beautiful day.
Oh, it sounds like it's going to be real nice.
Yep, After Bash.
No, it sounds like it's going to be all outdoors. If the weather provides, it should be real beautiful.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
there's we got a big barn also, if necessary, if it gets real cold or wet, we can go inside there and just keep rocking.
Okay, great. So now your petition, so you're going to have your petitions all out there too
yes.
for people to sign.
Definitely. We'll be circulating the petition.
And you want to legalize marijuana in Michigan. You're
That's
not
correct.
Talking about medical legalize. You want marijuana legalized in Michigan.
That is correct.
And what I
say is that we want to legalize it again. Okay,
yes.
From the beginning of time, it has been legal up until the last less than 100 years.
The Constitution was written on hemp paper.
Right. So We want to legalize it again in Michigan.
Okay. All right. Okay. So is it anything else that you got to say, Chuckalia, that you want? And if anyone has any questions that they want to ask E-Grease, you can call 347-215-8041. 347-215-8041 if you have any questions or comments that you would like to ask E-Grease. And so
I have another question, Beverly, I want to ask brother before
ahead.
I leave. Can I ask you a question, E-Grease?
Sure.
A friend of mine just said that Richard Nixon was the one that came along and made marijuana illegal. Do you know anything about that?
Well, yes. Actually, it preceded Richard Nixon. It was a man named Anslinger who back in the 40s, he convinced Congress to make the herb illegal. However, it was Nixon who began the so-called war on drugs. And, you know, there's a racial element to the war on drugs, and several books have been written by former Nixon people like Haldeman and so forth, who said that it was Nixon's intention and J. Edgar Hoover at that time to start the war on drugs as a means of controlling black people. And they have destroyed the black community with the war because they have injected the drugs into the community, injected the guns into the community, and then sat back and arrested everybody that they could and let the rest kill each other. This is the impact of the drug wars, and I hope my battery doesn't die.
It's a form of genocide, you're saying, my brother, right?
Yeah.
I'm hearing a beeping, but...
it's a form of genocide, right?
Yeah, it's a form of not just control of the black community, like you said, it's a form of genocide and of destruction of the black community that was just starting to rise up at the end of the 60s when all of a sudden all of these drugs were injected, literally, into the community. And we're still reeling from that. You know, we got brothers just coming out of prison right now from the drug war. And unfortunately, we got some who are going in, still going
in.
Yeah.
That produces another question, brother. When if they legalize marijuana totally, I mean, I saw her sister was saying this a minute ago about pharmaceutical drugs and pharmaceutical marijuana and regular marijuana. If they legalize it totally, that means that anyone can do anything they want with it. Are they going to release all the brothers they have in jail, like a brother that we love that's in there for so many years? Are they going to let the brothers out of jail?
That's a real good question. I would, from my humble legal opinion, yes, they would have to be retroactive to let those brothers go, including some of our great heroes from here in Detroit who have been locked down.
Yeah, Brother Bob Atulji, 26 years. Can you imagine that?
He never hurt anybody.
26 years for marijuana.
He never hurt anybody, and he helped a lot of people.
A lot of people. Bob Atulji was a great brother in the community. He helped a lot of the black schools and everything. And we will see him soon. I know 26 years,
I believe. Well, he sounded like he was a political prisoner.
Yeah, just about.
One of the reasons that they gave him so much time is because he stood defiant. And he refused to snitch, and he refused to...
take a plea bargain.
Right, and to... feel that he had done anything wrong because he didn't feel that he had done anything wrong. So they're making an example out of him.
Well, he'll be back, and he'll be back because marijuana will be legal inside of 26 years. He's already done 10.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But he'll be back. You know, Lord, I hope all of our black men will be out of the jails when marijuana is legal. And that's one of the divine things about us legalizing. It will free so many souls for these nonviolent crimes.
Yeah.
Now, the people that signed your petition, they have to be Michigan residents, right? Because I know out there you're going to have people that's going to be coming in from all over the world.
Yeah. The way it's set up, each petition sheet has to be from a particular county. So, you know, if you're from Wayne County, you have one that you can sign. If you're from Washtenaw County, you have a different one that you would have. So that everybody on that sheet is from that particular county.
They must be registered voters, correct?
Yeah, only registered voters and only Michigan voters. Yep.
Well, I'm going to give the line up for someone else to call you, Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
And brother, I want to thank you for what you brought to the table, and I'm really going to enjoy myself Saturday out there with you. I will be
right,
there.
Patrick. All right.
And you take
okay.
care. And Beverly, you stay wonderful and keep serving the community. We really need you.
Okay, and you too, Chandelier, and thank you.
And y'all have a great evening.
You too.
Vibrations, Brother Dries.
Vibration. I think his phone just cut off. Okay. Thank you, Chandelier.
Okay, bro. Okay, you be sweet,
okay.
sister. Take care.
Okay.
One love.
Okay. Well, for those of you who are planning on coming to the Hash Bash in Ann Arbor, come. It will be Ann Arbor, April the 7th. That's Saturday. And after that, you will have the After Bash, and that will be a reggae festival. And so this Saturday, it's a lot that's going on here in Michigan. You have Raheem Brooks. He will be in Michigan at 20900 DeQuinder. He will be signing his book at the DeQuinder Flea Market. And inside there is Hood's Bookstore. So he will be there from 11 to 4. And also on Saturday, April the 7th, at Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the University of Michigan, they will have their 40th Hash Bash. And after that, it will be the After Bash, and that will be the Reggae Festival. And that will be all night. And so a lot of good music. For those of you who love to smoke, you will have plenty of that on April the 7th. And so it just sounds like it's going to be a good time. So come and have fun here in Michigan on April the 7th. And so thank you for joining me tonight and my guests. And I will see you, or I will talk to you next Sunday at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Peace and much, much love. Thank you.